This is John Rappaport, monthly Solari report. Today, the Matrix is a covert operation. What is a covert operation? It's launched, we usually think, by intelligence agencies. And these operations have a pattern. Of course, there is a target, a goal, an objective to be reached. Let's do this, let's do that, let's depose this monarch, let's get rid of that head of state, let's run interference in a foreign country for mega corporations so that they can go in there and they can buy up land for agribusiness. They can employ cheap labor. They can basically steal the whole country. This kind of operation. And then we need the operatives. Who's going to do it? Well, we assign certain people to the job, and they have a handler. And depending on which country we're talking about, that handler could be called a control or a case officer. Who operates the agents and keeps tabs on what they're doing, writes up reports and so on and so forth, tries to help smooth the way for the covert op to succeed. Then we have the cover story. The cover story is all important. It's a pure invention to explain why the events that are actually the covert op are taking place. And this cover story is going to distract, divert, lie, in order to present a false picture of what's happening. For example, in a foreign nation, oh, great turmoil, rebels, revolution, dissatisfaction with the ruling party, the desire for more freedom, etc., etc., etc. Sort of like Arab Spring. That would be a good example. Oh, yeah, 16 people who were sitting in a cafe with cell phones and Facebook, were responsible for getting Mubarak out of Egypt. And the cover story has to be convincing. It has to be extensive. It has to be complicated. It has to be mysterious. It has to be difficult to figure out in some cases. It has to engage journalists and media outlets. It has to basically replace the truth, which is the covert op. So you have now a set of events that are being explained, you could say, in two different ways. The real explanation is the covert operatives, and the false explanation is the cover story. Now, if you have a really heavy covert op, major, big, huge, with far-reaching implications, then you're not only going to have a cover story, but you're going to have false trails. False trails means multiple storylines which future investigators can probe, all of which will end them up in a ditch, a dead end. They will be promising for a while, but then they'll peter out and exhaust the independent investigators or the government investigators or whoever's involved who has any shred of honesty. False trails are essential to postpone discovery, to stop discovery, to derail discovery of the truth. One of the prime examples would be the Kennedy assassination, JFK. So many false trails were laid down there. So many authors and investigators went off exploring these false trails. So many of them dead-ended eventually after years. We're not talking about, you know, a few days or a few weeks or a few months. We're talking about years. That's a good false trail. You know, you've got a map that somebody gives you on how to walk through a forest and get to the top of a mountain. And the map is not only wrong, but it leads you on a, you know, 5-year expedition through the forest into many, many, many promising trails up to the top of the mountain, none of which take you there. So you go back, you retrace your steps, you start a new one. False trails. Very, very important. And you can fill in the blanks for yourself on the Kennedy assassination. It was LBJ, it was Texas oil men, it was the CIA, it was the Cubans, it was the mob, it was Lee Oswald acting alone, it was Lee Oswald acting in concert with, take your pick. No. These false trails are intentionally laid down with clues, like a treasure hunt. Ooh, this one leads to that one, and then we have this one, and now there's a cancer research lab in David Ferry's apartment in in New Orleans, and, you know, I mean, this will take you forever. And then, in case there is any sort of threat, serious threat of exposure of the covert op at the time it's launched, just afterwards, much later, years later, there is what is called the limited hangout. That's an intelligence agency term for you admit to a piece of a crime. It's not all that serious, the admission. It may hang a few people out to dry. They may receive prison sentences and so forth, but they are compartmentalized off from the main highway of the operation, so they only know a small piece of it. They're caught with their pants down. The press covers it. Everybody congratulates himself on the exposure of a crime. But relatively speaking, the limited hangout is harmless because the covert op, the meat and potatoes of it, are covered. They are concealed. They remain concealed. But the psychology of the limited hangout is very powerful for most people because it's like, okay, now we can pack up and go home because we figured out what happened there. See? Yeah. It was one intelligence officer in Benghazi who got the communication wrong about the stand up, the stand down, the this, the that, whether it was really a demonstration outside or whether it was a planned attack, and he misinterpreted a cable from the State Department and failed to relay the truth onto special forces, and so they never arrived, et cetera, et cetera. Whatever it takes, the limited hangout. Yes, the State Department is going to have to take some responsibility for what happened here. And what does that even mean, take responsibility for? You know, what it really means is we're saying that we're taking responsibility, partial responsibility for it. That's all it means. Nobody's really responsible. And then, of course, the intelligence officer, if he's still alive, is going to be reassigned or demoted or fired or may even face charges, dereliction of duty, et cetera, et cetera. See, that's the limited hangout. And the press jumps all over this. Press loves limited hangouts. That's the, you know, that's their bread and butter. Oh, we have two sources who revealed the identity of the intelligence officer, and yes, and we corroborated this, and da, 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 da. And we have some documents that came into our possession that indicate strongly that there was dereliction of duty by this officer, Bob. He had been censured before on a couple of issues relating to his career, et cetera, et cetera. And the story drags on for a couple of weeks in the press, and everybody's very excited. There may even be a congressional hearing. And it's reported on the evening news, the wire services, the newspapers pick it up, on and on and on and on, expose, Peabody Award for limited hangout journalism. They should have an award like this, you see. The Peabody Award for Limited Hangout Journalism of 2013. The reporter who bit on the limited hangout, swallowed it whole, thought he had explored the scandal as deeply as it could possibly go, and published a series of stories in the New York Times, and now we're going to give them the Peabody and the Pulitzer for limited hangout journalism. At worst, from the point of view of intelligence agencies, what you see in the press is limited hangout confession. And they're fine with that. That ain't a problem, okay? So the limited hangout is the fallback position. In case any element of the covert op is discovered and the cover story is not completely bought and people are not completely saddled and hypnotized by all the false trails, okay, limited hangout. That's what we'll do. And this is where so many otherwise intelligent people go down. They buy it. They buy it. I'll give you a good example. As many of you know, for the last 30 years, I've been researching, investigating, and reporting on medical scandals. But my work goes a lot deeper than that, because it came to me as a revelation at some point that we weren't just simply talking about separate scandals. We were talking about an overall op to swallow people up in a toxic, poisonous, debilitating, killing machine called the medical cartel, based on false research, false approval of toxic drugs, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the limited hangout on that is Glaxo is fined $3 billion for trying to influence doctors on how to prescribe drugs for uses which are not included on the label. Glaxo pays an enormous fine, and everybody goes home, and the prosecutors are happy, and the press is happy because they got a big story for a couple of days, and, you know, pour the champagne, pop the corks, we did it. But the truth is, first of all, that Glaxo had the $3 billion or so waiting to pay because they suspected they were going down long before any of the stories were released to the press. And meanwhile, they had made, whatever, you know, $12 billion on selling this particular these particular drugs that their detail men had influenced doctors into prescribing. So let's see, 3 billion from 12 is 9. We made out great on this, boys, and we sold the limited hangout, which was, we're very sorry, we won't do it again. You know? And nobody goes to jail, and we pay the fine. And then stories can be floated, if necessary, about how this all happened. Well, the chief executives of Glaxo really weren't aware that their lessors were sending out employees of the company to doctors' offices to actually get them to prescribe the drugs for uses that were not indicated on the label. Well, we didn't know anything about that, and you know, we accept responsibility for it. Yes, indeed, we do. But we didn't know anything about it, and we will be more vigilant in the future. You can count on that, folks. Well, you go back 15, 20 years, you start adding up all the drug scandals. You start investigating the toxicity of many, 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 many of the drugs that are being prescribed to people all over the world. And now you begin to develop a quite different picture. You begin to develop a picture that involves more than false trails, much more than a limited hangout, more than a cover story. You begin to see intentionality. And this is where a lot of people just can't believe it, you see. They wouldn't do this on purpose. I mean, poisoning people with these drugs, I mean, this could never happen because, you know, they're trying to save lives and doctors are prescribing the drugs and there are studies that are published about the safety and efficacy of the drugs and so on and so on. But as you continue to investigate one scandal after another, you put it all together and you make a map and you lay it out on the table with the names of the companies and the drugs, and then you go further, deeper than those stories and you see other drugs. Wow. This, maybe it's more than just about money here, because, I mean, they know. They know what they're doing. They've known what they've been doing for years, for decades in releasing these drugs. These are not ignorant people. Foreknowledge of the heavy, heavy toxicity and destructive power of these drugs. Not just a day or two of foreknowledge, but decades and drug after drug after drug. This couldn't be an accident. They know. They know. And if they know and they do nothing about it at the highest levels of these mega pharmaceutical companies, what does that mean? They know and they do nothing about it. Well, what would you say if somebody in your town, a person that you knew, was committing serial crimes over a very long period of time? And despite making statements, you know, apologies and proclamations that he was going to reform his ways, et cetera, didn't happen. What happened instead was more and more and more and more crime. He knows. He knows he's committing crimes. And he's doing it on purpose. Wouldn't that be the conclusion? I think it would. I think it would. Well, what's different about a corporation? They want to be known as individuals, legally speaking, don't they? They've assembled vast PR machines and legal representation in order to get that to happen, and now it's happened. It's actually happened over a century ago. For certain purposes, a corporation is a person and has all the rights of a person. For others, not so. It's just the way the corporation wants it. So they know. And they keep doing it. That means purposeful action. Criminal purposeful action. That's the covert op. And then you have the cover story. We're the greatest in the world. We heal everything all the time. We're doing better with more drugs and fewer side effects. Now we're researching genetic causes of disease, and one day we'll all live in a paradise, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, on and on and on and on and on and on. The cover stories never quit. And the false trails are numerous because wherever you go in trying to find out who is making the decisions to purposefully poison the global population, you run into brick walls and blank spaces. Who are these people? Who's making the decisions? And who is just simply bamboozled into believing that they are doing good all the time? Very difficult to penetrate by looking for the who. Very difficult. There is the case, which I believe I related to you before, Fritz Termeer, who was the highest ranking scientific researcher on the board of IG Farben, the famous Nazi chemical and pharmaceutical cartel, who was involved in the torture, mass murder, and slavery of the Auschwitz medical experimentation unit during World War II, and the IG Farben facility where prison inmates at Auschwitz were sent every day to work until they dropped and died. At the Nuremberg trials, despite the best efforts of Telford Taylor, the chief U.S. prosecutor who really wanted to slam it to the mega corporate Nazis, the businessmen who had supported in all of these ways the rise of Hitler and the war, who wanted to make a mark and a precedent that corporate allies of war machines should be prosecuted as fully as other war criminals. Taylor was up against a juggernaut and was not able to obtain lengthy prosecution. So in the case of Fritz Termeer, it was a mere 7 years in jail, and that sentence was shortened. Fast forward to 1963, and the Bayer Corporation, which was one of the major components of IG Farben, is now riding on very high profits, doing fantastically well. And we find that Fritz Termeer is now a key figure on the supervisory board of Bayer. Boom. So that's a case in which we can trace the who and the kind of man that he was and see readily that the idea of poisoning massive populations, in other words, war by other means, chemical warfare by other means, would have been a walk in the park for this guy based on his wartime crimes. But what I've discovered is that the better way to uncover the overall pharmaceutical covert op is to look at the drugs and to go as deep as possible into their toxicity, their history, how long they've been used, the obvious awareness of the top people in these firms that they are extremely toxic and so on and so forth. So that gives you an opening picture of covert ops. Now, the Matrix. The Matrix is all of the above, everything I've been talking about, and so much, much more. As many of you know, I have two mega collections at No More Fake News, The Matrix Revealed and Exit from the Matrix, which, when I say mega, they are gigantic amounts of information to both understand the full range of the Matrix and ways of exiting it, not only on the level of decentralization of political power, but on the level of authentic, not fake, psychology and spirit. The Matrix is approachable and describable from many points of view and many levels. No one succinct definition is going to do the full job, but I will give you several vectors on this. The Matrix is a trance. It's a psychological trance in which people exist and live on the basis of, I'm here, I'm alive, this is the world, this is the environment, this is where I am, this is what my life is, and then eventually I will die. And I will make the best of it while I am here. Nothing about creating some unparalleled achievement, some tremendous enterprise, some triumph, big, major triumph. No, because that would tend to take you outside the Matrix. Now, instead, the trance on one level has to do with, I'm here, I'm alive, this is what I'm doing, this is planet Earth, I have my span of 70 or 80 years or whatever it is, and then I die. That's it. I make the best of it while I'm here. That's one aspect of the trance. The other aspect of the trance, to go a little bit deeper, is life is all about what already exists. What already exists, and my making an accommodation to that, to strategize about what I can do to make the most of what already exists, how I can fit in with what already exists, etc., as opposed to the invention of something that does not already exist, something major and significant. I'm not talking about something small and petty and, gradual. I'm talking about the kind of vision that would lead to unbelievable amounts of energy in the pursuit of that dream. Matrix is also a trance in the sense that it is based on acceptance and surrender, as if this is some sort of irresistible and irrefutable principle of the universe. Acceptance, surrender. In fact, that became rolled into a major covert op in the 1960s when certain spiritual systems and practices from Asia were reduced, recooked, distorted, and exported into the West. And one of the guiding axioms of that distorted version was, accept everything. Accept reality. Surrender to it. This is your road to enlightenment. false. Try it if you want to. Try it for the next 10 or 20 years and see where it leads. Make every effort in any way possible to accept what is and see where it gets you. Acceptance is a very interesting component of a much larger picture, but that much larger picture involves creative force of tremendous capacity, which has nothing to do with acceptance, quite the opposite. Those are just a few vectors toward a definition of what matrix is. Matrix is collectivism, the idea that the group is all, promoted in various sophisticated ways, and the individual is nothing. That at some point in our evolution as a species, we needed the concept of the distinct and independent and free individual because it was useful to us in our development, but now we've reached a level where we have a much higher and greater understanding that we all live on the same planet, it's all one great big global village, and therefore we have to completely cast aside and forget about the whole notion, just the way a snake sheds a skin. Oh yes, that was good for a while, the individual. Oh yeah, I remember that, sure, yeah, we really parlayed that into something, didn't we, boys? We sure did. Yeah, but now we can see that we're all here together and we have to completely desert that old notion. And now it's all about the collective. The greatest good for the greatest number, everything for the group, the individual is nothing. And it'll all be a tremendous party in paradise one day when we achieve massive, undeniable, all-inclusive, all-embracing group collective existence. This is an enormous distortion of the real meaning of real groups. It's a tremendous psyop, psychological operation. And it has been going on for quite some time. And it is intentional. And propaganda operatives through the press, through academic institutions, through government, through even corporations have forwarded this operation, this covert op. That is also a major, major part of the matrix. But the matrix itself is a covert operation. And its objective is to render your power at as close to zero as possible. In all manner of ways. In every vector you can think of. And beyond that, to make you unconscious and unaware of how much power you actually have, which you have never tapped into before at such profound levels. To keep you in amnesia about that to the point where you would consider any discussion of your own tremendous power to be a misnomer and somehow just a misconception because, hey, I'm just me, and here I am, and I'm alive, and then I die, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I make the best of it, and life is nice, and da-da-dee. You see? Power? Yes, I have a little power, sure, and I try to do the best I can with it. Yeah, that's all. I remain humble at all times. That's my watchword, humility. Because, you see, as the covert op of Matrix goes, the other side of that coin of humility is arrogance. arrogance, the terrible sin of arrogance and greed, selfishness, etc., etc., etc. All of these things, you see, are piled up on the other side as, you better not do that, you better not do this, that would be very bad, this would really be a bad thing, don't even think of doing it, no, 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 people will hate you, you'll hate yourself, that's a bad, immoral thing. Whereas the truth is, you simply have tremendous amounts of untapped power that you can use for the good. The good of you, the good of others, the good of everybody. And that power is the power to make things happen, to make them come true beyond your wildest dreams in this and other dimensions of experience. So now we're getting to the edge of something that people like to call paranormal. I'm not crazy about the word. It sounds kind of like something that only happens in a laboratory. Oh, yes, we're doing experiments in the lab. And we have noticed, a statistical trend in the direction of some semblance of what we could call paranormal ability. Now, this is you. This is inherent in you. Power. Beyond the five senses, including the five senses. And the power to invent reality that did not exist before in many dimensions, which all of these things I explore in Matrix Revealed and Exit from the Matrix. Not just to learn about the kind of power that you have, but to find it, to discover it, to use it, to employ it beyond the covert op called the Matrix, which, again, is leveled at producing a state of total amnesia and disbelief about the extent of your individual power. Why? That's a good question. Why would anybody want to do this? Why would anybody want to design a system as wide-ranging that has so many different elements and vectors and levels and so forth as a matrix whose very purpose would be anti-life, anti-life force, anti-you, anti-individual, anti-power? Because there are people, you know, the brutal truth, if we undress it, is there are people who want to use whatever power they can find within themselves to dominate and destroy other people and keep them under their thumb and control them and minimize them and diminish them to the point where they are living and walking around like little cartoons of what they really are, doing little cartoonish things of which they are really capable. That's as far as the matrix makers have been able to find their own power, which is really very superficial when you come to think of it. That's as far as they were ever able to go. Not to discover the kind of power that they have to do good for themselves and for other people. And for everybody, but to reduce everything around them. That's as far as they were able to go. And that's where they sit. And that's what they do. And you can say all things about it that you want to. And I'm sure that most of the things you would say about that are true and right and correct and real. But that's the situation. And therefore, they design a gigantic, all-embracing covert op called reality. This is reality, or Matrix. So, to be frank, what I came across maybe 10 or 15 years ago was the question, well, how do you talk to people about their own power who are in a state of amnesia about it? What do you do? What do you do? Do you try to rehypnotize them in some way and say, well, that amnesia was a bad amnesia. Now, you know, I'm going to give you a new state of hypnosis in which you will believe, because I suggest it to you, that you have a great deal more power than you think you do. Is that the way to go? To take the hypnotic essence of Matrix and just repackage it as another form of hypnosis, but this time saying to people, you have enormous power, you know, and try to entrance them and entrain them with that idea? No, of course not. It doesn't work. No hypnosis gives people authentic connection to their own authentic power. It's just another form of sleep. Walking sometimes looks very energetic, but it's still sleepwalking. So when I left the field of you know, conventional journalism, so to speak, and went online in 2001, I said, okay, what I'm going to do is an all-out assault and attack on the word. Was not Matrix was not in my vocabulary at the time, but soon after, it was. From as many different directions as possible, to expose various covert ops at many different levels, in many different venues. Because in doing so, some people would begin to wake up, not only to a specific covert op, but to the way that they're built. To the way they operate, the way they function, the way they conceal themselves with cover stories, false trails, and limited hangouts. People will say, well, gee, if that's so here, and I understand it to be true, then maybe it's, maybe I've been bamboozled in other areas. And indeed, that's the case. So that was one strategy. That's been an enduring strategy for the last 10 years, 11 years online. But the other major strategy is to talk about power. What is it? How far can it go? Because in all of us, there are these things, you see, these moments, these insights, if you want to call it that, like a bright glint of something. Person says, wow, you know, there are levels of operating beyond where I'm operating. You know, it's not just I want to change my job from job A to job B. This is quite a bit more profound, really. There are levels of operating beyond where I'm operating. Levels of energy, levels of power, levels of creativity, levels of imagination, levels of achievement, levels of vision. Yeah. How to talk about that in many, many different ways. How to present that to people. Because that is beyond covert op. That is overriding covert op. And one of the things I discovered, which I'll pass along to you, and one of many, is that part of the programming and the conditioning and the hypnosis of people that keep them away from these levels of operating and power and so on that are beyond where they're operating now, part of that programming has to do with, of all things, aesthetics. I'm talking about harmony, symmetry, balance, geometry, geometric forms, and so forth and so on in the mind. People are trained and educated to believe, and they train and educate themselves to believe, that the special little feeling of excitement and peace and so forth that they feel when they see something absolutely harmonious and symmetrical and so on is a kind of an ultimate aesthetic. See? And strange to say, and I know this may sound a bit far out, but aesthetics, even though they're never talked about, even though they're never considered, even though it's not part of our natural discourse with each other, you see, aesthetics bleeds through all of one's experience in all of life. Their own aesthetic, what they consider to be beautiful and pleasant. And if a person is solidly, I mean, it's just solidly in the camp of, in order for me to think it's any good, in order for me to like something, it's got to be harmonious and symmetrical and geometrical, and it sort of has to express a unity. That's the way I will now perceive the world. That's the way I will now see. That's the way I will now think. And anything that comes into me from the outside that doesn't fit that bill, I'm going to automatically reject. Well, what do you think is going to happen when somebody comes along and says, hey, this is a revolt against the empire? Do you think that's going to sound harmonious and symmetrical and beautiful and unified and kind of delicious and so forth? Of course not. No. It's going to upset apple carts. It's going to look chaotic because, in a sense, it is chaotic. But to a person who is solidly entrenched in a subconscious, shall we say, aesthetic or aesthetics, about experience where everything has to be balanced for the left to the right, the top to the bottom, and the harmony and the symmetry and so forth and so on. And that's what, you know, that's the ideal, and that's all that's acceptable, you see. It's going to be very, very difficult to budge that person off the dime to move in any way from where they already are. And so in that sense, the classical beauty, you might call it, etc., all of those standards can be deployed in the mind to act as a total barrier against contacting the deeper levels of one's own power. Because at the deeper levels of one's own power, one is going to be inventing new realities that do not exist now. And in the process of doing that, many apple carts are going to be upset. All is not going to be wonderful, you see. And I hope you get some part of what I'm getting at here, because this is extremely vital and rarely, if ever, discussed. And because I've been, as well as a reporter, a painter for a much longer period than I've been a reporter, I've had what you could call intimate experience with this, you see. You walk through a museum and you say, well, this is the room I want to be in. And use the museum as a metaphor for life, okay? This is the room I want to be in all the time, because look at that marvelous painting of the forest and the way the sun is perfectly bound from the sky and the trees on the left and the right, and it's all so beautiful. And then look here at this gorgeous prince on the throne and so forth and the sky, and oh, it's all harmonious and beautiful and so forth. And then if I have to walk out of this room into that other, oh my God, I don't want to go there, because No, something else is happening there. You say, oh, no. That is I don't know, it just feels strange. It's something off balance about, oh, it's not the same gorgeous comfort as in this room where I am now, you see. But suppose that if you walk into that other room, the room that right now may feel uncomfortable and so forth, what you discover there is 13,000 trunks, storage lockers, when you open them, that have enormous amounts of energy in there that are really your energy. They've been there all the time. They're yours. They're not anybody else's. And they've been stashed there. And you're not going there. And you won't go there. And you absolutely refuse to go there because it seems to you that there is something disharmonious about it. And therefore, you will never venture into it. Get it? Get it? One of the great purposes of art, down through history, and by art I mean all the arts, has been to reveal creative power that goes beyond the mundane resolution by symmetry and harmony and so on and so forth. And it's not bad. It's not chaotic in some horrible sense. Any more than the fires that burn in the core of the sun could be said to be disharmonious. They are the fires that burn in the core of the sun. Or take some megastar that is, hundreds of thousands of times bigger than the sun. And the power inherent in it. Are you going to go in there and say, well, I don't like this. This is not good. I don't like what's happening in here because there's all this, energy just going everywhere in all directions, very fantastic, but it's not, it's not all organized. The left doesn't exactly balance with the right, and it's not all symmetrical and harmonious. And so, are you going to do that? No. In fact, if you can transport yourself in this metaphor that I'm sketching out here into the core of one of these megastars and sit there right in the middle of it and experience all that energy and fantastic power, you're going to have a revelatory experience. You're going to say, wow, this is quite incredible. See? Incredible. Now that I'm here for a little while and I'm beginning to get the point, it's not a bad thing. It doesn't throw you off. It doesn't kick you to the side. It doesn't, disbalance you. Quite the opposite. It centers you in a new territory of your own power. And this is beyond any covert op. This is what the covert op called the Matrix is trying to discredit and squelch. And one of the ways it has attempted to discredit all of that, you see, is to try to lock people up into a kind of provincial notion of aesthetics. Oh, you see, it's all very arranged and yes, perfect, and I don't want to disturb that. No. So wherever I think I might find tremendous, raw, wonderful, fantastic, flowing power and energy, I'm not going to go there because that's not going to be arranged all very nicely the way I want it to be arranged all very nicely. This is big, what I'm talking about here. This is major, major, major big. So the covert op that has to do with aesthetics is, well, these immutable principles have been passed down to us from, the mists from the dawn of time, and we know what is beautiful, and we know, how we should respond to what is beautiful, and how we should attempt to play it out in our lives and build it in our lives, and this is it. See, that's the capper. It's not saying, yes, you can walk into a room in the museum and you can see these wonderful classical Greek statues and these fabulous Renaissance sculptures and Dutch Renaissance paintings, and it's all very good, and then you can walk into other rooms. No, no, no. It's saying you never walk into any other rooms, you see. This is it. This is all there is. This is it. This was always it. And this is all that you should pay attention to. And if you will keep paying attention to these principles of what is acceptable, then you will become hypnotized by it, and you will become excessively entranced and entrained by it, and that will be your reality forever, and you will never want to disturb it, and you will never find the fantastically wonderful volcanic cores of your own energy and power to create and to make new realities and achieve tremendous triumphs in life. The covert op rules against that, or tries to. And it is only successful to the degree, the covert op called the Matrix is only successful to the degree, you see, that people, individuals, will not discover these levels of operation that are far beyond where they are operating now. But once they do discover that, all bets are off. The trance goes away. The trance was always very filmy and very thin to begin with. It may have looked like a brick wall, but it never really was. The covert op just simply dissolves and disintegrates. That's what happens. That's what happens. And I think I'll leave it right there. Thanks very much for listening. This is John Rappaport. You can find my work at nomorefakenews.com. As always, thanks to Catherine and Solari for being able to do these monthly reports. See you next time.